But this is Application Paranoia, episode 16. So welcome again to Application Paranoia, a podcast about application security, DevSecOps, and AppScan. Twice a month, we aim to bring you some technical insights, assorted facts, and the latest news from the world of HCL AppScan. I'm Colin Bell, and with me, as always, I have my trusty colleagues, Rob Cuddy and Christopher Dewar. This week's episode, we're going to be talking to Aitan Warsall, who's our Application Security Product Manager. We hope to learn not just about some of the highlights from the past year, but we hope he might actually share us a bit of a glimpse into the future. But you never do know, so we'll hold tight on that one. So anyway, Rob, how are you?
I'm doing really good.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Our Thanksgiving was really good. It was relatively quiet for us. It's always kind of the four of us and my wife's mom. No huge gatherings because our family spread all over the country. But yeah, it was great to be in and be able to see everybody. And we don't officially start decorating for Christmas until after Thanksgiving because we always like to kind of pause and
celebrate.
Yeah, exactly. And so
you do know that there's 12 days of Christmas, but not one of them is in November.
Exactly.
I don't know why you would bring that up. I don't know. Hobby Lobby was a nut house.
Yeah, no, I Black Friday for me is hang lights on the house day and stuff like that. So, yeah, I avoid the shopping craze as much as I can.
So. It's funny. Christmas has sort of started early. I mean, over here, I think because people are at home, we've been in lockdown. So people have been putting Christmas decorations up in November.
Yeah, I'm surprised they waited till November and didn't do it October 31st at, 8.
Yeah.
Halloween's over at 8, really.
Right.
So, Chris, I can hear you. How are you?
I'm good. I had last week off on vacation, so I did a lot of disc golf. Woo! Competed in a tournament, got last. It was great.
I thought you said disco.
No, disco. Why would I disco?
I can understand Chris getting last in a disco tournament.
Disco, you're amazing, sir. Thank you for coming out and participating. Here's your trophy.
Yes. Just be careful you're not playing disc golf with a white disc.
Yeah, no, in the snow, that's not ideal.
Yeah, and a mirror ball.
I think you're onto something now.
Bell bottoms. I got 50 feet out of my drive with these bad boys.
you could just see that, use that John Travolta form on the toss.
I'm sure it works. I'm sure it's fine.
Sure, it works great. Not a problem.
I was enjoying just looking at the news and seeing that you still haven't got a president yet.
We still don't have a president. What the heck is going on? I don't even know.
Yes. Well, to be completely, technical, right? We never have a president until the Electoral College meets and then confers all of the results, but it's extremely rare that it's different from what states would, have in their elections. So that's supposed to happen a little bit later in December. And then we'll see. But yeah, it's a little unusual to have not had, kind of some finality or concessions or any of that stuff at this point.
Is there anything more 2020 than this, though?
Yeah, it's just crazy.
We don't know.
It's just crazy.
And speaking of crazy, did you see in Utah there was a monolith?
Yes.
Yeah. 10-1, that was an artist that just put it there and said, for the lulz.
Yes.
It was there for a long time before it was discovered.
Yeah, yes. 2016 it was put in or something like that.
Yes, but did you happen to notice the best thing I saw about that monolith was somebody decided to Photoshop Southwest Airlines row numbers on the top of it. And Southwest Airlines actually picked it up and put it out as a marketing gimmick. And then had to
rows 31 to 35 stand here in the middle of the desert.
Exactly. And then they had to backtrack just a little bit when they forgot to give credit to the guy who had actually done the Photoshopping, and he called him out on it, and they were cool about it. But I thought that was really clever because it actually did look like that.
So. People are crazy clever.
Yes.
And then some dudes then went to, well, they know where it is now. It's some dudes went in there. All they could find was a triangle piece that had been left of it because it had been taken away again.
So. Yep. Maybe it's portable.
My monolith.
I'm wondering if there's going to be a few thousand of them floating around near Jupiter.
They're everywhere. It turns out they're a source of infinite power, but you can only get it if you find it first.
Wow. It's the 2020 Infinity Stones.
The ultimate geocache.
Exactly. I think it's fascinating. I mentioned the Christmas light thing before. I'm a big fan of the Christmas light displays and stuff like that. So I
really?
Yes. Now, I don't go completely crazy, you know.
I'd say you do. But,
I feel like he does too.
I do add try to add an element or two every year. I do not do the big inflatables, in case you're wondering, but this year I decided to add kind of a river element to the front yard, and the kids in the neighborhood love that. They were jumping over it last night and stuff like that.
Is that because you don't have much rain there, is it?
No, we get a little bit, but I just wanted something a little more unique. But if you think I'm bad, right, there is a guy, the world record for the most lights on a property like mine. It's a residential property, right? Just somebody's home. 601,736 lights in a little town called LaGrangeville, which is in upstate New York. I actually know where that is because I knew a family that lived there for a while, but that was back in 2014, and the guy also had more than 200 songs that were playing as part of that display. So I want to know what his electric bill looked like.
Several thousand an hour.
Yes,
probably. Yep. Still next door's electricity. Yeah. Or something.
No, they're all LED lights. They're very carbon friendly.
Of course. Yeah, and you may appreciate this, Colin, being an Aussie. The Guinness World Record for the largest display of Christmas lights on an artificial tree, about a year or so ago, 518,838 individual lights on one artificial tree.
It's records like that just don't make any sense and sort of take some of the longest time I was standing on 1 foot. Why is that a record?
Exactly. That's a lot. That's a big tree.
There's a lot of lights.
An artificial tree. So they built a tree to put the lights on it. You could literally go out of your way and beat that if you really had a mind to.
Yeah, if you wanted to. This is actually
this is my fake tree with more lights. By one.
By one.
HCL has our office in New York is right opposite the Rockefeller Center. You know.
Ah, yes.
Usually this time of year, we have our user group meeting and we're over there and you can see it. But I had a look at the sad and sorry state of the tree.
That's caused quite the uproar, hasn't it? It's just got a fall. Dad's everywhere.
If you have not seen the video of them putting that tree up, you need to go find it.
Because it's worth a watch.
Yes.
They found an owl in it as well.
Yeah, exactly. They found an owl in it. I'm not surprised. I'd be surprised if they didn't find Jimmy Hoffa in it.
And that AppScan news, we've got a couple of very interesting bits of news. I think the first one regarding ASOC is our European data center.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Turns out Europe is much like America, where they want sovereignty over their data. Who knew?
Yeah.
No way.
It's a pretty common requirement for governments, it turns out.
Yeah, so that kicked off, when was it? It was last week or the week before?
I think it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but it's wonderful news. So that's probably the biggest news around ASOC. But there are a couple of minor enhancements that have made. I'm assuming there's going to be one made soon because the last one was on November the 9th. Don't think there's much more than what we talked about last time. The mobile scanning now, I guess, Chris?
Yeah, there's supports for iOS up to version 14.1. Wow. And rest assured, it is not easy to add support for those. So this is a big deal release for us. That's kind of nice.
And I guess the other one is the Azure plugin as well.
Yeah, how wild is that?
So do you know much about that one, or what's improved in the plugin itself?
No, just that it's available now. You can get it on their marketplace. They scan your Azure stuff.
And I know that we're very, very close to AppSky and 10.03 releases. Mm-hmm.
That should be released before the year ends, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a early December sort of thing. So probably by the time we do our last show for the year, we should be able to sort of give a big update on a lot of those things.
Yeah.
We might spoil the surprise because we've got Eitan on. He might give us a slap on the wrist if we mention things at the time. So with that, we can move on to Chris's best practice.
Yeah. So Chris,
what have you got for us today?
So today we're going to go skimmy dipping.
I know. Pardon?
Yeah. We're going to talk about skimmers and shimmers. I know this is an AppSec kind of podcast, and we generally do revolve around different problems you can write in your code, but I figured, you know, much like phishing, this is something that applies to regular folk, like, you know, not developers, and something we should all be aware of and what they are and what they can do and some of the things you can do to protect yourself from, you know, skimmy dipping.
Is that a real term or is that a Chris term?
Oh, no, it's definitely a real term. Yeah. No, it's not. But skimmers are, you know, they're intended or designed to read the mag strip for your credit card. So if you insert it into a compromised ATM or a gas station or a point of sale system or something like that, it can read that information from the credit card and send it off to the thief. We're going to call them a thief, even though they're technically, you know, hackers or bad people. But they'll use your credit card to buy stuff. And for us anyway, around here, even in, you know, Manch Vegas, this is a problem. There was one gas station my wife would go to regularly, use her debit card before we had credit cards. This was years back. I mean, this is not a new technology. But we'd have to cancel a card every time she went there because every time we'd get hit with a charge that was not us. It was wild. It's like, where is this coming from? So it's not just bad employees that are like, oh, I'm going to steal your credit card number and use it. It's probably not that. It's likely a skimmer that she was hitting or running into that was in their point of sale system. It was pretty wild. But it's sometimes they're, you know, identical. They place it over the top. If you've ever seen, you know, some movies that show you where they take it off the entire front face of the ATM and it's a whole skimmer setup, they can be hard to spot sometimes. And shimmers are effectively the same idea, but they sit inside the card reader, so they're paper thin. You don't even know they're there. You can't even really tell. There's no outward appearance. I mean, you can install these if you're an attacker in seconds. I mean, you could do it in a grocery store, boop, boop, pretend you're paying, and then, oh, no, different card. And in fact, the first card was your, you know, your shimmer. So it's, you know, be careful out there. So this lends itself the question, well, what can I as a regular person do to protect myself at all from something this insidious and this so very difficult to protect yourself against? So for me, anyway, my first thing I do is never, never use your debit card anywhere if you can help it, especially not as debit. Use it as a credit card because credit cards have built-in fraud protections that you can go and get that money back in a much easier way than your bank. I don't know if anyone's tried to get money back from a fraudulent bank charge. It's not the world's easiest process, but credit card companies, you know, it's a little button. Boop, you click it on your app and off you go. So it's a lot easier to deal with. Really, the next part for me anyway is I check to see if there are any obvious signs of tampering, you know, little screwdriver marks on the gas station trying to get the plate off or things like that. Or even in an ATM, if you can pull on the card reader and it's loose, it should not be loose. I mean, those things are built like tanks. So if it's loose, you need to skedaddle to a new one or a different one because this one is not safe. It's probably going to steal your stuff.
There are some interesting things you can do. I mean, over here we have chip and pin, but I was always amazed how slow the US was in picking up on that,
you know? Yeah, and there's a problem with that because, you know, thieves have had all this time in Europe to figure out how to break into the chip and pin system, which they can't. But what they can do is still read your credit card number from the chips. So they are effectively the same thing as mag reading. So you still need to worry about, you know, chip and tap and all of that, and make sure you use a credit card. So even if you use a chip-enabled debit card, you still have the problem. And the other fun part is trust nobody, including the machine, which is if you do use your debit card in a bank that you do trust, cover the pin pad with your hand, assuming there's a camera somewhere, even if someone's looking, or pretend there's someone looking over your shoulder at all times, no matter what. You might look a little goofy, but you're going to feel a lot better when you don't get your money stolen for, you know, your mortgage payment or your rent payment next month.
But I guess the thing with the chip and pin is, if you're sitting in a restaurant in Europe, you know, the card reader comes over to you. So the card never actually leaves your person. And that's the part of the security that I never quite got. Your card disappears, goes in the back.
Who knows where it goes? Who knows what they're using it for? Exactly. Yeah. But that lends itself to even more, don't use your debit card as a debit card, which you can in a restaurant anyway. Because you do have built-in protections. Credit card companies are very serious about that because it costs them a lot of money. And, you know, it costs the companies a lot of money. So they have a vested interest in making sure fraud goes down. So protect yourself. Use a credit card that has solid protections. There's even this weird concept of a virtual card number that credit cards offer you, so that if that virtual number gets compromised, you just get a new virtual number and your actual credit card doesn't have to go away. And then and you just, you know, assign a new one, which I thought was interesting. I never even heard of that before. But it's like an extra buffer layer between you and the actual credit card, so that if something bad does happen and somebody does compromise that virtual number, you don't have to replace your card. You just get a new virtual number and off you go.
So do you guys have Revolut over there?
No, I've never heard of that, so I'm guessing okay. No.
So Revolut is a kind of bank sort of thing. So basically you set up an online account, and if I wanted to give you money, and I would go to your Revolut account and I could pass money to
you. Oh, yeah.
But you can also have a bank card. So my Revolut account, you know, if I was going to buy something, I'd put the money that I need into it and then use that card. And then there's never anything in that account. So if someone got hold of it, there's no money in it.
It's like good luck buying nothing.
And you only shift money into it when you're making a purchase online, you know. So.
Yeah, and that would be the ultra safe, paranoid way to go about it. And the reality is most people aren't going to do that. I know I certainly won't. Can you imagine? Oh, shoot. How much is milk today? $3.35? Okay, $3.35 in my account. No, my God. What a pain. I'm sure there are ways to handle it. But yeah, just be aware that these things exist and they are a thing. And, you know, protect yourself. Check your credit card statements. You have about 60 days to report a fraud. Give or take, depending on the company, I suspect. But for the most part, it's 60 days. So monthly, check your statements monthly and confirm that those purchases are you.
Sometimes the banks contact me when it's compromised a few times. Yeah.
Yeah. And
my card was used to buy, what was it? It was to buy truck fuel in the Ukraine at one stage. And they were asking, were you in the Ukraine? I go, no.
I don't even know where that is on a map. But yeah, that's another thing credit cards can do. I'm sure you've seen a lot of commercials where, did you make this purchase? If your credit card offers that, use it. For crying out loud, use it. It's easy. Protect yourself. Then you can know right away if you're compromised.
Yeah.
It can be a pain when you're traveling, of course, because you can't get a new card right away. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And these are simple, simple things you can do. Use a tap chip, magstripe in that order if you can help it.
Yeah. And what about that? What's the thoughts on a lot of people now are using watches and devices for tapping and buying?
Right.
You
know? Yeah, from everything I've read anyway, tapping is similar to chips, where it's very incredibly secure. I have no idea if they can get the magnetic strip number from a tap. I haven't looked into that or figured that part out. Well, I expect they can. But either way, tapping is from everything I've read and everything I understand, just as safe as chipping.
Okay. Yeah, it's more the compromise, like if you lose your watch and your watch is tied to your account.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you should have phone security anyways to begin with and full-on encryption and all that. But regular folk, you know, they have that stupid little pattern that they put on their phone or no lock screen code at all, which, oh my gosh, you have no lock screen code? What are you doing? What happens if you lose your phone? But yeah, I mean, you know, protect yourself. Make sure the purchases are you. Skimmers and shimmers. Stay out of the pond if you can help it.
Yep. So how do you feel about the whole biometrics in this space?
I personally would love to be able to just biometrically pay for things with my thumb or my spit. You imagine every purchase like, poo. Wow.
You don't want to just blink, right? Can you imagine? Yeah.
That's not going to be very COVID friendly, though.
No. Stop spitting on my thing. But yeah, no, I would vastly love for that system to be in place. The only problem is you have a whole bunch of questions around privacy and my DNA is now part of my quote unquote fingerprint, which I have to give to the credit card companies. So there's going to be a lot of resistance. But I mean, if Altered Carbon showed us anything, it's coming.
Yeah. Well, and somebody really clever is going to write something to do a little retina scan on an online shopping site and take things and add them to your cart every time you blink.
Can you imagine the nightmare that was? Exactly. Would be, I want your wallet. Well, I don't carry a wallet. Ah, I was referring to your left eyeball.
Oh, yes. I wasn't blinking.
That's a nice eye you have there, sir.
Technology moves really quickly because it does. Things like, so for COVID in particular, in this part of the world, suddenly no one has cash anymore. Everyone is tapping. And I can imagine that will continue beyond the pandemic sort of thing. So it's almost like it's changed the way people look at, you know, cash, you know, it's like it's
will money even ever be printed? Yeah.
Is that the same in the States? I mean, tap wasn't really a thing in the States. Has that become a
thing? No, that's pretty new. That's pretty recent. It's not like last month, but it's within the last few years where that's been a thing. And my new credit card hasn't, you know, before it didn't. And you just, this is wildly awesome. Just boop, tap it. I don't know why that's never been a thing.
But are people taking that up en masse over there?
Yeah? I think so, yeah. There's very few people that use cash everywhere I go anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even not that they're open, well, they might reopen tomorrow if we're lucky, but going to a pub, you know, it's like,
My card.
Yeah, you just tap every time you buy a round of drinks, you know, it's like it's
fake so money. It's all a construct.
And you don't go home with a pocket full of coins, you know,
it's so much better. Yeah, I haven't used cash to buy stuff in I don't know how long.
Our special guest this week, and I'm very, very pleased that he's joining us, is Eitan Worsall, who is our Application Security Product Manager. So Eitan, as you may know, runs our AppScan Tuesdays. So unlike us, who you don't see very often, you would see Eitan a lot more than you'd see us. So welcome, Eitan, and I'm really pleased to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited. I'm one of your biggest fans for the three of you. Really enjoying when I work the backyard or occasionally running, not as frequent as you do, Colin.
No, I do it a fair bit, yeah. So we got you on because we want to find out a little bit about where AppScan is now and where AppScan might be going, but also, you know, pick your brains on some topics around application security as well. You know, we're approaching the end of 2020, and despite it being a challenging year in lots of ways, it's quite surprising to look back and think we've really done quite a lot to our product commitments. So in a year where AppScan reached version 10 and was released and stuff like that, what for you were the big highlights with the product?
Well, yeah, it's been a crazy year, and I'm so happy that we started working on V10 before all the craziness started. There are a lot of exciting things there. It's hard to name, so I'll pick a few, right? First of all, we've added IAST. Colin, you and I are working in AppScan since 2007, I think. Yeah. And we remember very well that we had IaaS back in 2011 already, but it was active IaaS. Now we align to what the industry is looking to get, and we have our passive IaaS, and it's available both on the cloud and on-prem. Interactive application security testing, for those who are not familiar or didn't listen to the great session you had with Gal, one of the first ones. So I'm really excited about that, first of all. Static analysis. So the BYOL, I don't know if many know this story, but Chris and I, back with David Marshak and Larry Gerard at that time, met in Vegas and in one of the IBM conferences, and we're talking about languages. And we were trying to figure out why does it take a year or two to get languages. And Chris said, well, actually, I can spin it much faster. I just need to do the infrastructure. And that's where it started, right? Chris built an amazing infrastructure that allows people to add languages. We added, I think, about between added new languages and updated frameworks, probably about 15 different languages this year, which is crazy. And The third one is about dynamic analysis, where I come from, and I think that we are able to prove that Dask has a good place in automation, in DevOps now, with the test optimization, where scans are completing faster, incremental scanning, and all sorts of capabilities that we've added to support the DevOps side of the house and not just security, while still catering to security. So a lot of exciting stuff and still coming next week, also parts of them, right? So it's amazing. Amazing year. And wait, don't forget about that. Code Sweep, which is amazing. Over 5,300 downloads since April. And if you're listening to this and you don't know what Code Sweep is,
Code Sweep,
shame on you. Go and download it. We give it for free. And why? Because we are awesome. And we may be actually your customer and we want you to secure your code. Even we give it for free.
Yes. You don't have to pay anything
but a few seconds of time.
Yeah, we've been plugging it quite regularly. Yeah,
it's awesome. So, I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, and if someone is still not using it, shame on you.
Exactly.
Download. Use it.
Exactly. You know, having listened to Chris all year, I can just imagine how that conversation in Vegas went between the four of you. So
it was exciting.
That's outstanding. That is great. I love that.
The real Vegas this time, not Manch Vegas.
Yes, the real Vegas. Exactly. Manch Vegas would be a very different discussion.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Want to share with Colin and Rob. My kids were playing basketball past few months, and I was going to New Hampshire to do the tournaments because in Massachusetts it wasn't allowed, and it was allowed in New Hampshire. Who knows why?
There you go.
Passed through Manchester a few times. It's not Vegas.
No, it's not. We like to think it is. It's a little tongue-in-cheek compliment for Manchester.
Yes.
We do have a casino, though.
There's a town in not far from me in Ireland called Mullinavat, and basically it's a long street with 8 pubs on it, and locally it's called Mullin of Vegas.
Mullin of Vegas. Wow.
We're not the only ones who like the word Vegas. It means fun.
It started it. All right, so since you brought up basketball, Eitan, I'm curious about this, because I know you've been coaching for a while now. So I'm curious, have you ever noticed any interesting parallels between basketball and application security?
Well, I was coaching my kids, my daughter's third grade team, and it feels like developers around security, they don't know nothing.
calling us out.
But with the proper guidance, they you know, they learn and they improve and they enjoy it so much. So hopefully, I can't say that developers will enjoy application security, but they can enjoy the outcome of not being blocked from release, right? You have SQL injection. No, I don't. Already fixed it. You know, stuff like that.
Exactly. Learn how to dribble. That's
a learn
metaphor. Learn how application security is dribbling.
Learn how to scan, right? Exactly. So what would your game day advice be then for some of those folks if you were managing kind of a team of developers getting into AppSec?
Well, it's hard to say advice. It's all about, I think, and I learned that a lot from working with Colin in the past also. You need to interview them. You need to understand and have realistic goals. And the worst goal ever, and I used to hear that a lot from 2, 3, 4 years ago, is we have a requirement from upper management or executive level to automate all our scans by the end of this quarter. don't do that. That's the opposite of getting more secure. That's just wasting your time on automating something that you're not going to use to do anything about it.
Just like pushing a boulder up a hill.
Well, we got it up
here, now what?
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, are you going to fix anything? Are you going to view the results? No, it's not part of the requirement. So have a realistic goal that actually gives value. Can be as small as just, I think it was in the last session, Chris, you mentioned about the open source. Scan for open source. If you don't do anything else, scan for vulnerable open source libraries. Right. Maybe start there.
It's such a simple thing too.
And some teams are built to do the open source. Some, weird enough, are built to do dynamic analysis. We have customers that are doing just dynamic analysis and nothing else, but it works well for them and they get a lot of value. And being a vendor here, I never try to force my solution on them. And before we add IaaS in Appkin, I was also recommending, hey, you should do IaaS. It brings value. Do what's best for your use case. That's the key. Don't force it.
Yeah. And if I can, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but since you kind of brought it up a second ago, no, I'm just curious, what are some of the things that you think people should really measure for success in application security? The things that really matter, right? Because we always measure all these things, but if we're just automating for the sake of automating, that's not that great. So what do you think are kind of the key sort of benchmarks for a good AppSec program? What should they be paying attention to?
It's really hard to say, because if you don't scan, if you don't, let's look at QA, right? Before you test, you don't have defects. So do you actually measure by the number of defects you have, and are you doing better? If I speak with a new customers, with a new prospect that didn't do anything in application security, they don't have vulnerabilities, right? Because no one told them that they have.
Exactly.
Ignorance is bliss.
and the more you scan, the more vulnerabilities you have. Oh my God, I'm getting worse. Yeah. No. It would be cool to measure how many breaches you have now versus in the past, but it's a bad situation to be here. And right. In discussions that I had in the past with customers, I used to ask them about, as they do the application security testing as part of their pipeline, do they see less interruptions in release? Because at the end of it, companies still do pen testing. They do it once a year, they do it once a quarter, they do it once every blue moon, because they are required to. This is how you measure. If you just started, if you are using it and running scans, I would measure by the fixes. And no one does that.
That's the wildest thought. How many did you fix this past quarter?
Yeah.
There would be zero, but we found 1,000. I'm doing great. No, yeah, exactly. No.
We are now automating any commit on GitHub. We are scanning 1,000 times a day. Right. Okay.
What are you doing with that information?
Yeah.
Was that boulder at the top of the mountain? You doing good up there?
I think you were talking about data privacy last time, and I think that compliance doesn't even consider fixing, right? It's all about the scanning.
Yeah. That's why it's a great place to start, to begin. Not a great place to... That is not the finish line. That's literally the beginning of the race. And it is a marathon. It
tells you about the problem.
Always like the Japanese mindset, which was, you know, hey, we've scanned an application, we ran 20,000 tests, and only 5 of them failed. You know, so they spin it and look at the other way around, you know, whereas we always focus on, you know, the 5 that failed, you know. So,
yeah, in my past life, when I was doing the level 3 support for AppScan Standard, I used to work a lot with the Japanese customers, because for them, it was those 5 that failed. I had to spend so much time on making sure that they won't fail and explaining why they failed and how to fix it. It was finding everything. And you know, it's the mindset, right? Of you can't have any failures. It's not about fixing everything, as you just alluded to, right? They're not fixing all the vulnerabilities. They just want to make sure that they know all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Another question for you, and really taking it along, what's in the industry now. So some hot topics that we've heard a lot of in the last year, and maybe a lot longer, is around things like threat modeling, open source or SCA, and container security. So how do you think this is affecting the way that AppScan is evolving?
Well, it affects. It definitely does. As you know, and many know, we have a partnership with WhiteSource that goes a few years back. We are going to do more with them now. We are going to enhance the software composition. I prefer the OSA, the open source analysis term, over the software composition analysis. I think the software composition analysis is broader, not necessarily to the right place. We are going to do more around open source analysis and in that capabilities that they have on containers and everything that is infrastructure as code, right? The containers and Kubernetes and the YAMLs and all that. You spoke with Jeff a few weeks ago. I can't recall if you covered that, but it is important. We are going to do some things. Hopefully, early next year, you will hear about it, because we are not going to share before.
Yeah.
Something that Chris, I don't know if you know, but I spoke with Florent. He's actually going to look into BYOL.
The crap I do know. Some of the things there. Talking to him now about it, it turns out.
Yeah. So we are eager to show the greatness of that platform, because at the end it's a language, right? Contain Dockerfile, it's a language. YAML, it's everything that you write, you can write rules on. And threat modeling, well, it's not a product, right? Florent, no. Colin, it's not. It's a practice, and that's where you and people from your side come in with their expertise and chaperoning and helping teams. And you mentioned to me, and I reached out actually to the cybersecurity teams that we have in ATL, who has a practice for this, and we're going to promote them more. They have a great practice, according to you.
I guess with threat modeling, it is a practice, but you end up with a load of requirements or something for it. Mm-hmm. I think there's still a vision where you could, you know, track that through your whole process. And that's where I think a lot of the automation and tooling is, not just ours, but a lot of it sort of falls, that it's in its own bucket. Whereas it can sort of transcend right across the,
So something like the SD element from Security Compass, I forget.
Perhaps.
And we integrate with them. We're not going to implement everything. We use integrations to
increase. Why reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
I think there's a place too, though, where I love the idea of tracing that from requirement all the way through. But I think there's a place too where there's maybe a simplified model just to give developers a better understanding of how they could be exploited, getting them in an exercise where they're thinking a little bit differently. They get away from the happy path and the, functionality works, and just thinking differently about it. So I would love to see some of that kind of stuff come about.
Threat modeling is both fun and a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly.
You play with it, you say, oh my God, I'll try this. Oh, we didn't think about that. It's like a puzzle.
Yeah.
You end up that puzzle, it is great, and you find all those things, but now, oh, I need to validate all that. I need to protect. This is really painful going to be now. Oh, product manager, that's me now. There will be a delay in the release because we need to protect our program better. And by the way, this is a really interesting dilemma that product managers have, because PMs never give you a request to be secure, right? I want that capability. My customer needs that capability. So for us, at least it's known and we understand. But product managers out there in other areas of not application security will never ask their team to implement a security feature.
Yeah, but I mean, right? If you look at it, it's kind of the same way as unit tests. Like, they don't ask you to write unit tests for this thing or make sure you have functional tests. Why do we not think AppSec is kind of similar to unit tests in this day and age? It should be, at least static analysis for developers. Freaking CodeSweep is free. Isn't that just a thing that people use, like unit tests, to protect themselves? I mean, if it was me anyway, I've written so many unit tests just to make sure I don't do something goofy and break yet another build, that it's just, it makes no sense why you wouldn't want to make sure your code is protected against yourself.
I think there are two answers for this, Chris. None of them are good. The first is laziness, and I was a very lazy developer. But to my defense, I think that Bill Gates once said that the lazy developers are the best because they look for the shortcuts.
They find a way to get it done.
That's what I think he's referring to. I'm just not going to do the work.
Exactly. That's not my real excuse. So laziness, same way that people weren't using, how was it called, bounce checker or something, to make sure that you're not have all those memory leaks in the past. And performance. So that's one. The other one is even worse, is ignorance. Because developers don't think application security. We know that. And no matter how good the tools will be, and no matter how secure code training is known out there and OWASP and all that, if it's not part of what people learn in the academy, they will never understand that.
And it also by that, where he's like, what did you go to learn about application security? They're like, what is that? Every single college hire that we're getting, it's insane to me. How is this not you know, like your English and your math if you're in a programming field. How is this not your bare minimum stuff? Like, what is SQL injection?
Yeah, and you do learn about in the early stages, you learn about validating your input to know if I fill in the array with 100 characters, I will make sure that I only have 100, and those are characters between A and Z, right? Not digits. So why not going the extra mile of, okay, now we've done that. Now make sure that those are secured. What does it mean? Here's the course for you.
Right. And it's a model that needs to happen because, you know, even still in the academic world, right, so much of it is outside in. It's networks, it's firewalls, it's all of, you know, the outer perimeter type stuff that gets taught. And we're only now scratching the surface of getting AppSec in as part of those kind of core things. But I look at it like, man, it's better to solve the problem before you have it.
You know, right? Build your what is it, walls out of steel, and then leave the gate open for crying out loud.
Exactly.
The one image with the bar across the road and the tire lines going on the grass around is like, did we not think this through?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same as idea as, you know, eat healthy and exercise, and you know, you'll be better, right? You'll have less health problems generally. So why not do the same thing with your code?
And Rob, that firewall that you said, that was the most common excuse that people say when you tell them to do application security. We don't need to. Why? Because we have a firewall. Seriously? It didn't work that well for, I don't know, I don't want to name names, but for some credit card company or financial company a year ago, I think.
Yeah.
With their firewall that due to inside information, someone got the key to the firewall. And that was a very security aware company, but still.
Yep. Well, just ask them, you know, when they go for a drive, do they wear a seatbelt?
Yeah.
Oh, we don't need to because we have
the car is steel plated. It's fine. Right?
So. Exactly. Airbags, so there is always room for more. I mean, exactly. It's up to them to decide on the risk, right? But
right.
We had a customer and their CISO told us there is the proactive approach and the reactive. So be proactive, secure your code. Don't wait. Don't depend on your SIEM and incident response teams and all that. Try to avoid the hack in the first place. Try to not the hack, the breach, right?
The breach.
People will hack. We'll try to hack all the time.
Yep. So I got to ask you, being a product manager, right? And you do a great job with this with our guys, but has there been any kind of unique challenges or difficulties just that the pandemic has caused? How's it been?
It was, and the hardest part is being compassionate. You know me. It's not easy for me to be compassionate with others, but to understand that everyone are messed up. I mean, I have 3 kids at home and 3 dogs. I don't know if you hear them in the background. They're old enough, so I don't need to take care of them all the time, but it's hard. Some have 2 years old, 3 years old, and they don't leave the house. We have a team in India. We have a team in Israel. They were under a long quarantine time. It's really, really hard. And you need to set your deliveries and understand, okay, things will slip. And that's okay, because it's just business. It's not life. We had people that caught it, you know, both in my team and outside. It's hard. It was a year that all of us can't wait to forget
about. Yeah, let's wipe that one off the map if we could. That'd be great.
Yep. Yeah.
But I like to talk about things I've seen in the wild. And one of my favorite stories is an actual real world example of a sanitizer for cross-site scripting. Literally says cleanse XSS. And all it did was look for and remove script tags from code, which is great. That's nice. It only, you know, it impacts works. 1% of cross-site scripting attacks. But what is a fun example like that that you've actually seen in really, really real code out there in the world?
But first of all, Chris, it works.
It works, does it?
And it's probably cleaned his unit test of that person. If
the unit test that just sends script tags in. That's the only place a cross-site scripting happens, really.
Yeah, this is how you do a cross-site scripting. What do you mean? And when I moved to the US 4 and something years ago, Chris and I used to work not far from you, right in the office. I learned so much about static analysis, and I was shocked coming from the dynamic analysis side, where the developer can actually tell the tool, hey, I fixed it. Job done. And that's why I loved, it was really hard for me to trust the developer for knowing what he's doing and what he's saying, because as you said, the developer said, hey, I fix it. Similar things I saw from my previous role, right? I got a customer complaining about false positive. And why? Because we reported a SQL injection with AppScan Standard. It cleaned it. How? He escaped the tag and called it a day. And we still complain. And now we complain about it with a different variant. Why do we do that? Why are we not accepting? And part of the cool thing about dynamic analysis tools that they are trying it, right, with different variants. I think that, I mean, IaaS can do the same. SaaS can do the same, but SaaS has to trust the developers. So that's a bad thing. But with the dynamic analysis, it was really cool to show that the customer, actually, we have a variety of variants here, and all of them can exploit that SQL injection that you have. So in better words, do your work properly, look at our advisories and fix recommendation and implement or find out there. There are good libraries, and someone once said on this show, use prepared statements.
Why is SQL injection still a thing?
Stop writing your own sanitizers. Oh, someone smart enough did it, and if they are wrong, you will learn about it also. So
you need a t-shirt with that on. So I think we've got time for one last question here, Eitan. And I think most importantly, what I want to sort of understand is maybe what we can expect in 2021, not with promises, but what sort of directions are we going to take the tooling in, and what do you think our customers can expect with the year ahead?
So 2021 will be awesome, assuming COVID will relax a bit. We have a release coming just December 7th, so I think it's after this podcast. And that's just basically, it's more of V10, more secured, more faster, more languages, all sorts of stuff. But what we are planning for next year, we are going to be tightening our story, right? We have in AppScan, we have the software composition analysis, open source analysis, dynamic analysis, static analysis, interactive analysis. And you spoke with Shahar at the time, you spoke also with Dragon. And you were speaking also about the correlation between the results as the holy grail of this. We found the holy grail, and maybe Monty Python needs to do another movie, because we found it, and we are working on productizing it. We will show the world that if you run IaaS and you run Dust and you run SaaS, we won't tell you about new vulnerabilities. We will show you actually that this vulnerability from DAS and this with SAS are the same. We have IaaS as the glue to connect between them. And we will be able to show more than that. We will be able to tell you, this static analysis finding, pay attention, because we know it's true. We found it with IaaS. We don't just in theory knows it. We factually know that it happened. The amount of things that we are going to do, it's rocking our world internally.
Yeah, it's game changing.
Add to that all the revamping that we are doing for the advisories and fixed recommendation and security data, whatever we want to call it, to be in the face of the developer and exactly what he needs to see. A developer, again, putting myself back in those lazy developer shoes, I don't want to read everything about cross-site scripting every time that I have one. The first time that I see it, I just want, tell me how to fix it. Save me the trip to Stack Overflow. Show me your explanation. If I happen to see it twice or three times, I will read more. I'll try to do the due diligence. But the first time, just tell me what to do. Have mercy on me. So those are the main things, the really big items we will do there. Outside of that, more languages, infrastructure as code, going to reach new heights. Next year, AppScan turns 20. Did you know that?
Wow.
I did. That we need to have a party.
Yeah, yay, we need
a party.
We need to find a month.
Do you know what month it turns 20?
I checked Wikipedia. I believe it is February, but maybe we'll just define the month based on COVID so we can actually have a party.
Well, look, Eitan, I think we, as always, we run out of time very quickly on this, but it's been fantastic talking to you. Really appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely.
I know you'll be back with us again at some point, you know. So, but,
it's fun.
But, you know, yes. Thanks for everything that you've done with the product, and we look forward to more of the same.
Yes, great work.
So, thanks, guys.
Nope.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Bye.
That brings us to the end of another fun episode. So thank you, Rob, and thank you, Chris.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, thanks for having.
We'll see you in 2 weeks when we do our review show.
Yes, woo-hoo! It's going to be very fun. Looking forward to it.
And we're going to have a different host. I'm not going to host it. So there's a surprise, you know?
Great.
Cliffhanger. Yes.
Cliffhanger.